हरे आम सहना वरत सहना भुनत सहरे यंगर वावाई ते जस्विना वरे रमस्तमारे द्वेशावाई चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Section 3, Paushya. Sauti said, Janamejaya, the son of Pariket, was, with his brothers, attending his long sacrifice on the plains of Kurukshetra. His brothers were three, Shrutasena, Ugrasena, and Bhimasena. And as they were sitting at the sacrifice, there arrived at the spot an offspring of Sharama, the celestial dog. And belabored by the brothers of Janamejaya, he ran away to his mother, crying in pain. And his mother, seeing him crying exceedingly, asked him, Why criest thou so? Who hath beaten thee? And being thus questioned, he said unto his mother, I have been belabored by the brothers of Janamejaya. And his mother replied, Thou hast committed some fault for which thou hast been beaten. Right? I mean, this is the first thing. If something goes wrong, then immediately it's, you must have done something wrong, otherwise why they would beat you. Right? He answered, I have not committed any fault. I have not touched the sacrificial butter with my tongue, nor have I even cast a look upon it. His mother, Sarama, hearing this, and much distressed at the affliction of her son, went to the place where Janamejaya with his brothers was at his long extending sacrifice, and she addressed Janamejaya in anger, saying, This my son hath committed no fault. He hath not looked upon your sacrificial butter, nor hath he touched it with his tongue. Wherefore hath he been beaten? They said not a word in reply, whereupon she said, As ye have beaten my son who hath committed no fault, therefore shall evil come upon ye when ye least expect it. Right. Janamejaya, thus addressed by the celestial dog Sharama, became exceedingly alarmed and dejected, and after the sacrifice was concluded, returned to Hastinapur. It began to take great pains in searching for a Puruhit who could by procuring absolution for his sin neutralize the effect of the curse. Right? So even though this is a dog cursing him, still it was wrong, right? So the dealing there, so we could say, well, it's just a dog. But still, the point is the dog did nothing wrong, right? So it can't be dealt with improperly. Does that make sense? One day, Janamejaya, the son of Pariket, while a-hunting, observed in a particular part of his dominions a hermitage where dwelt a certain rishi of fame, Shrutashrava. He had a son named Somashrava, deeply engaged in ascetic devotions. Being desirous of appointing that son to the rishi as his puruhit, Janamejaya, the son of Pariket, saluted the rishi and addressed him, saying, O possessor of the six attributes, let this thy son be my puruhit. The rishi thus addressed answered Janamejaya, O Janamejaya, this my son, deep in ascetic devotions, accomplished in the study of the Vedas, and endued with the full force of my asceticism, is born of the womb of a she-snake that hath drunk my vital fluid. He is able to absolve thee from all offenses save that committed against Mahadev. right? Except he can free him from any sins unless they've been offense committed against Lord Shiva. But he hath one particular habit, namely, he would grant to any Brahman whatever he may be begged of him. If thou canst put up with it, then thou take him. Right? It means if he's at the sacrifice, someone says, oh, can I have all this paraphernalia? He'll just give it to them. Right? And the king will just have to get more. You know, like that. Janamejaya thus addressed, replied to the Rishi, it shall be even so. And accepting him for his Puruhit, he returned to his capital. And he then addressed his brothers, saying, this is the person I have chosen for my spiritual master. Whatsoever he may say must be complied with by you without examination. And his brothers did as they were directed. And giving these directions to his brothers, the king marched towards Takshashila and brought that country under his authority. So we see here is that in the Vedic thing, Vedic concept is that whoever is doing the pujas for you, whoever is doing preaching or teaching for you, something, at that time of the length of that, they're guru, they're spiritual master. Does that make sense? So it's like you do a deity installation somewhere, then the priests, they become the spiritual master of the people who have invited them. Unless, of course, there's someone senior, then that's another thing. But does that make sense? Or teacher, you're under the teacher, they're spiritual master for that time. Right? Relationship may continue beyond, but technically then during that time is when, you know, all the proper etiquettes are there. After that time, then it's whatever is your personal relationship. Does that make sense? Like that, yes.
Instructed his brothers to accept everything without an examination,
You shouldn't accept things blindly. That's because Janamejaya, this is his younger brothers, he's already examined. Right? Janamejaya already examined the great sage and his son. And after hearing all the things, then he's decided this is good. So he has been examined. So it's not blind. Now it's just, you know, this is the duty. Otherwise then, okay, then, you know, you tell someone to do something, you know, let's say there's 20 people under you, and then you have the VP, you tell him to, okay, you know, get the other 19 to do this, but, you know, but then he has to, you know, examine it, and then he tells each one, and each one, no. Yeah. Means whoever is the responsible party, they have to examine it, but once they've examined it, then it's followed, right? There has to be some point at which faith kicks in, because that's when work happens. Examination means your faith is not there, activity's not happening. It's important, but you're only establishing sambandha. But once sambandha is established, then there must be faith, otherwise there is no abhideya. Right? Someone without faith does not perform devotional service. They may contemplate it, think about it, you know, kind of be around the edges and observe it, but they're not doing it. So you have to have faith to do. So at some point that has to come in. That's why it said the spiritual master disciple, then they check, examine. But once they accept it, then it works. Right. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, so there always should be respect in Vedic culture. Always accepting someone as guru.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if he's only waiting for the initiation. Always should be respect to anybody who's...
Anyone's seen it. Because initiation is a formality. That's not actually the initiation. It means it's recognized at that point and that it becomes official. But actually accepting the instructions as life and soul, that's initiation. That's the actual life of it. You know, just like how you say? Yeah, that's just the way it works. So, because if you've had the initiation, you don't follow the instructions, then the connection's not strong. You're connected, but it's not strong. But if you're following the instructions and you haven't had initiation, the connection's strong, but it's not necessarily official. I mean, as a siksha relationship, yes, it's official. Diksha relationship hasn't been formalized. So the siksha is actually the life of the thing. You know, that's the main. You know, like you may have a nice car, but if there's no petrol in it, it doesn't do anything. So that's the important. Yes?
Raj, before you mentioned that the Rishi's son is able to absorb all the curses, but one, you know, which is committed towards Lord Mahadev, does that mean it's because he's a Vaishnava?
Not necessarily. He may be Vaishnava, he may not be Vaishnava. The point is that Mahadev, the snakes and Mahadev kind of have a close connection, because Sankarshan, right? So Anantadev is the head of the snakes, you know, so then, therefore, and the snakes, you always see he wears snakes as his ornaments and like that. So they just, you know, if it's connected with him, then they don't get involved. Like that. He may be a devotee, he may not. That's a secondary point. Okay? About this time, there was a rishi, Ayodhya by name, and Ayodhya had three disciples, Upamanyu, Aruni, and Veda. It's not a little too much, it echoes. And the rishi bade one of these disciples, Aruni of Panchala, to go up and stop up a breach in the water course of a certain field. Right? It means, you know how the water moves through the fields? And then waters a certain field, so when it moves through the channels, so one of those had broken, the water's just going out. So he told them to go and fix that. And Aruni of Panchala, thus ordered by his preceptor, repaired to the spot. And having gone there, he saw that he could not stop up the breach in the water course by ordinary means. Means you just dig some mud and put it there, or just push it with your hand, or like that. And he was distressed because he could not do his preceptor's bidding. Right? He didn't just go, oh well, and walk off. You know? But at length he saw a way and said, well, I will do it in this way. He then went down to the breach and lay down himself there, and the water was thus confined. Right? It was too big, so he just laid down himself, and that was enough to stop the water. And sometime after, the preceptor, Ayodhya, asked his other disciples where Aruni of Panchala was. And they answered, sir, he hath been sent by yourself, saying, go up, go stop up the breach in the watercourse of the fields. Thus reminded, Dhomya, addressing his disciples, said, then let us all go to the place where he is. And having arrived there, he shouted, ho, Aruni of Panchala, where art thou? Come hither, my child. And Aruni, hearing the voice of his preceptor, speedily came out of the watercourse and stood before his preceptor. And addressing the latter, Aruni said, here I am in the breach of the watercourse. Not having been able to devise any other means, I entered myself for the purpose of preventing the water running out. It is only upon hearing thy voice that having left it and allowed the waters to escape, I stood before thee. I salute thee, master. Tell me what I have to do. Right? He didn't say, hey, you told me to hold up the breach, now you're calling me to do this and that. No, he's saying, I was taking the breach, but you called me, so I'm coming here, but the breach is, you know, open. So then it's a matter of, oh, okay, go back to the breach or, you know, or something else. Does that make sense? So two things are there. One is you don't, when you have one service and you're asked to do something else, you don't snap back and say, but you told me to do this, or I got to do this, right? That shows you didn't want to do it in the first place, right? But he's happily, yes, I'm doing that, but you inform what you are doing. The other side is you're already doing something, and someone comes up and says, oh, you should go do this. You should inform them what you're doing now, and then they will decide whether that should continue or you should do the new work that they asked. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, you may be, let's say, making the deity's plate. And the person that comes up and says, oh, can you go get this one? You know, they saw you walk by. They don't know you're walking by to get the plate. And they just say, oh, this one called. Can you go get him for the phone? Right? And then you run off to get the phone. And then later, then it's like, what happened to the offering? Oh, he told me to go answer the phone. But you have to tell them, no, I'm making the offering. And then if they say, no, this is more important, then you go and get the person and come back. Then if there's any problem, then the person who told you, it's their responsibility. Right? And if not, then they've already weighed, no, this is more important, you know, okay, we'll be 5 minutes late, but this is more important. Does that make sense? Or they may say, no, okay, you go, I'll find someone else. Does that make sense? So that's... The preceptor thus addressed replied, Because in getting up from the ditch thou hast opened the watercourse, thenceforth shalt thou be called Udalaka, as a mark of thy preceptor's favor. Right? Udalaka you'll hear in the Upanishads. I'm not sure he's not involved in Svaita Sotara, but he's one of the major sages that you'll see in the Vedic literature. Thou shalt be called Udalaka as a mark of thy preceptor's favor. And because my words have been obeyed by thee, thou shalt obtain great fortune. And all the Vedas shall shine in thee, and all the Dharma Shastras also. And Aruni, thus addressed by his preceptor, went to the country after his heart. Right? In other words, he had graduated. Graduate means there's two ways you can graduate. One is by the amount of time that you vowed is finished. The other is that your study is finished. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? There's no limit on the time. It's by how much you get to. Or it can be you've gotten to that in a shorter time. You can stay anyway for that length of time or like that. Depends upon which is the main thing. You know what I'm saying? Because there always should be focus. If it says, I'm going to learn, you know, this Veda, so when that Veda is learned, then you can leave, because your vow was the Veda. Right? So instead of doing it in 12 years, you did it in 10 years. Or if the vow is, I'm going to study for 12 years, then even if you finish one Veda, it doesn't matter. You stay for the 12 years, right? Because focus is the most important thing. You want to get something done, then focus is important. Does that make sense? Because without focus, nothing happens. Okay, like that. So, yeah, and so we see here is because he got the preceptor's favor, then he'll get good fortune, right? Because it said mother, father, and the preceptor, mother, father, teacher. These are the three one always has to obey, right? It's not the one over the other. These are the three. So then, getting their blessings, then one will have good fortune. Without it, one doesn't have, right? Like that. And then, because of that, then on the other side, because here is Brahmacharya, he's come to the teacher for that, then what kind of fortune? So then that would be, the Vedas shall shine in thee, means that one will be full with this knowledge, one will be able to use it, preach it, you know, study it, understand it. And also the Dharma Shastras, because that's the application. So here he was able to very nicely, as a Brahmacharya, follow the order of the Guru. So that means he'll be outstanding in the performance of duties. Right? Like that. So that he had that faith in Guru, then that knowledge, because the ultimate is faith in full faith in Krishna, it develops into prema. Right? And then, you know, because of the proper performance of duties, then he was able to, the Dharma Shastras will also shine. The name of another of Ayodhya Dhomya's disciples was Upamanyu. And Domya appointed him, saying, "Go, my child, Upamanyu, look after the kine." And according to his preceptor's orders, he went to tend the kine. And having watched them all day, he returned in the evening to the preceptor's house, and standing before him, he saluted him respectfully. And his preceptor, seeing him in good condition of body, asked him, "Upamanyu, my child, upon what dost thou support thyself?" Well, that means he came back after all day in the field, come back in the evening. And he's looking quite, you know, healthy and happy and all that. So he's asking, you know, how, you know, what did you eat? You know, how are you taking care of yourself? "Thou art exceedingly plump." And he answered, "Sir, I support myself by begging." And his preceptor said, "What is obtained in alms should not be used by thee without offering it to me." Right? Means, in other words, whoever you're under the care of, then for a brahmachari, for the son, or for the wife, then who they're under, what money they make, actually belongs to the person they're under. Does that make sense? That means, in other words, you do some activity, from that you're getting a remuneration. You have a job, or you go begging. Begging is the occupation of a brahmachari, right? Does that make sense? Or if the son goes out, he works and gets money, or the wife goes out, works, gets money, then it becomes it's actually the money of the husband or of the father. Does that make sense? Personal gift, that's a different thing, right? The personal gifts that are given to women, that is their property. It's not the property of the husband, right? The wife is the property of the husband. Along with that comes her property. But it's her property, so he never uses it separately. You know what I'm saying? I mean, she has ornaments, she has money. He himself won't use that money because that's hers. But she gets furniture, let's say, from her family, so she's going to use her furniture for her family and for her husband. And so then, you know, that's been arranged, so he does. But he can't decide, okay, we're going to sell this furniture and use the money for something else. No, it's hers. Does that make sense? So it's a subtle point. But it's just, so he's on this is because he's begging. He's a brahmachari. What he begs belongs to the guru, not to himself. So using it without the guru's permission then is not proper, right? And Upamanyu, thus told, went away, and having obtained alms, he offered the same to his preceptor. And his preceptor took from him even the whole, means he just took everything. And Upamanyu, thus treated, went to attend the cattle. And having watched them all day, he returned in the evening to his preceptor's abode. And he stood before his preceptor and saluted him with respect. And his preceptor, perceiving that he still continued to be of good condition of body, said unto him, Upamanyu, my child, I take from thee even the whole of what thou hast obtainest in alms, without leaving anything for thee. How then dost thou at present contrive to support thyself? And Upamanyu said to his preceptor, Sir, having made over to you all that I have obtained in alms, I go a-begging a second time for supporting myself. And his preceptor then replied, This is not the way in which thou shouldest obey the preceptor. By this thou art diminishing the support of others that live by begging. Truly, having supported thyself so, thou hast proven thyself covetous. And Upamanyu, having signified his assent to all his preceptors said, went away to attend the cattle. So, and here then we see that he went begging a second time. Okay, because what I got was taken by the preceptor. I'll go beg a second time. But one is that he only has the right to beg once, right? Because other brahmacharis and, you know, widows and unfortunate persons and vanaprasas and sannyasis, they're out begging. So if he begs a second time, that means he's taken someone else's quota, right? That's the whole point, is everybody has a quota. You do certain things, that's your quota. So in doing that, you can't take from someone else's. Does that make sense? So the point is in the Vedic system is you survive and others survive, not that you survive doubly well and someone else doesn't survive at all. That's not the policy, right? Vedic is everybody should survive. And he says covetous means that you're wanting more than what's yours, because yours has already been given to the preceptor. So what you begged and used for yourself, that was someone else's. Right? Does that make sense? And then we see that after he signified his assent, means he understood what the teacher had said. So that must be there, not that you just sit and because it was some how you say, something you didn't like, so then you get grumpy and you sit on the side and don't come to the class. Means you are told something, and so then you know that this is what's there, you assent to it, and then you, you move forward. In other words, the instruction is for your benefit, right? Otherwise, there's no need to instruct. Right? It means, in other words, someone's instructing you for your benefit. You take it properly, then one is inspired to give further instruction. You don't, then there's no need to give instruction. You know what I'm saying? Like that. One, the teacher is not obliged to teach you. He teaches you because you want to learn and you use what is learned. Does that make sense? Right? You just like somebody gives you something to do. You do it, they'll give you that again. Let's say that you want to do the artik, so then they let you do the artik. You do it, then you get to do it again. But if you don't do it, then they won't let you do it again. You know what I'm saying? So you have to use what's there, right? Properly, right? And having watched them all day, he returned to his preceptor's house. And he stood before his preceptor and saluted him respectfully. And his preceptor, observing that he was still fat, said again unto him, Upamanyu, my child, I take from thee all thou hast abstainest in alms, and thou dost not go a-begging a second time, and yet art thou in a healthy condition. How dost thou support thyself? And Upamanyu thus questioned, answered, Sir, I now live upon the milk of these cows. And his preceptor thereupon told him, It is not lawful for thee to appropriate the milk without having first obtained my consent. And Upamanyu, having assented to the justice of these observations, went away to tend the kine. Right? Then here is that now, because the cows belong to somebody, right? And he's tending the cows on their behalf. So the milk of the cows belongs to the person he's tending for, right? Unless he's given a quota, but he hasn't been up to now. Does that make sense? Because it would be like this. One could say, no, but according to Dharma Shastra, then one out of every ten, the best one out of every ten cows, that milk goes to the cowherd who takes care of the milk cows for someone else, right? It means you have 100 cows, so you divide it into groups of 10. So whatever is the best of those 10 in each of those 10 groups, that milk goes to the person who tends the cows, right? Not the worst, right? That would generally be the case. But no, the Vedas say it's the best. So then one can say, but therefore he's tending the cows, he should get, right? But he's not a separate person, right? He's not a grihastha. He's a brahmachari who's under the spiritual master. So even if you say that one-tenth is his due, but whatever is his due goes back to the spiritual master. Does that make sense? So in either way, he wouldn't get any unless it's been authorized. Does that make sense? And he says, and he slew to, how you say? He sent it to the justice. In other words, he saw the point. He can't say, well, how am I supposed to eat this and that? That wasn't the discussion, right? If you notice up to now, it hasn't come that part. They've only actually discussed his method of supporting himself. Right? Because up to now, he has not taken shelter that his support is from the spiritual master. Note that. Otherwise, one may think, oh, the spiritual master is being mean. Right? No, because it hasn't come where he's actually taken shelter of the spiritual master. Right? He's doing service. He's a nice guy. He's pious, but he hasn't actually surrendered. Right? Does that make sense? So even here we have those who don't surrender and behave badly. Here's also who don't surrender and who behave and do everything perfectly. Because the real point is the attitude. That's the most important. The attitude is right, everything will be right. And then he returned to his preceptor's abode. He stood before him and saluted him as usual. Right? Means, in other words, it's not that, you know, you do it every day so it gets boring. No, it's done every day. Right? Even though it's the same thing, it's as usual. It's always like that. This as usual doesn't mean that it's casual, that he doesn't pay attention. It means as he should according to regulation. And his preceptor, seeing that he was still fat, said, Upamanyu, my child, thou eatest no longer of alms, nor dost thou go a-begging a second time, not even drinkest of the milk, yet art thou fat. By what means dost thou contrive to live now? And Upamanyu replied, Sir, I now sip the froth that these calves throw out while sucking their mother's teats. And the preceptor said, These generous calves, I suppose, out of compassion for thee, throw out large quantities of froth. Wouldest thou stand in the way of their full meals by acting as thou hast done? Right? So now he's saying that the calves, when they suck the milk, then froth comes out of their mouth. And so I'm drinking that. And he says, but the calves, being kind to you, probably throw a little bit extra, so they're not actually getting full. Right? So then he's saying, so now you're looking at it like that, but now are you going to feel, are you going to, how do you say it? Maintain yourself by others not being able to get their appropriate amount. Does that make sense? Right? Because that's ultimately an important element. Just like technically in the sannyas, the brahmachari and the grihastha vanaprastha, they go begging before lunch, right? Because the grihastha is supposed to give alms and charity before he eats, right? To these persons. So he must give something. But now the sannyasis don't go at that time. They go after the meal's finished, after the cooking's finished, after the pots are cleaned, and whatever hasn't been eaten by the beggars, those who are begging, those who are special guests, the dependents in the family, the servants, and the grihastha himself, whatever may be left at that time, that's when he goes begging. Right? Because then you're not making any imposition on anybody. It's extra anyway. Does that make sense? That's when they go. Of course, you could say you could have it as a snack in the evening when you have to brush when you have to brush your teeth or something. That's there. But you're not doing that. You know what I'm saying? So these are all things that are there, is that you don't get yours, your maintenance, at the expense of someone else's. Right, it's very important. Right, someone already has a service. They're doing a nice service. You want that service. You don't take it away. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, then some sannyasis, they also have gurukuls, and the brahmacharis, they go out begging before the grihastha eats, and the brahmacharis, they are supposed to give everything to the teacher. So how does this thing work in that?
Because this begging is the brahmacharis begging. So it falls in the lines of there. You know what I'm saying? Because the school is your training brahmacharis. So the brahmacharis perform their duties, which is to go begging before lunch, right? If you had a sannyasi and he's traveling on his own, traveling with a few brahmacharis, so it's the sannyasi traveling, they're just assisting him. He's not, you know, as specifically running a school where he's training brahmacharis. They'll get trained as brahmacharis. Then they would beg at that time. If they're begging for as brahmacharis, they're that. But if they're begging on his behalf, they would go at his time. Does that make sense? Wow. So it depends. Yes.
I have not seen in India brahmacharis going begging, but I have seen in Thailand and Burma, they every morning they make a line, mm-hmm. a long line, and they walk. Yeah. Like you said, before breakfast and before lunch.
Yeah.
They follow the Buddhists, they follow strictly the
I think if you go to where there's really old established gurukuls, like Kangri Gurukul, or let's say Sringeri Math, Varanasi, you'd probably see there, you know, like that. Because these are old established, so they would be following these old traditions. Other ones, they'd probably go, but they'll do it differently, like that. You know, so then it's like that. And Upamanyu, having signified his assent to this, went as before to tend the cows. And restrained by his preceptor, he feedeth not on alms, nor hath he anything else to eat. He drinketh not of the milk, nor tasteth he of the froth. And Upamanyu, one day, oppressed by hunger, went in the forest, ate of the leaves of the arka, Asclepius Gigantea, right? Remember this name. Don't eat these leaves. And his eyes being affected by the pungent, acrimonious, crude, and saline properties of the leaves which he had eaten, he became blind, right? Eat other leaves, not these. And he was crawling, and as he was crawling about, he fell into a pit. And upon his not returning that day, when the sun was sinking down behind the summit of the western mountains, the preceptor observed to his disciples that Upamanyu has not yet come. And they told him that he had gone out with the cattle. The preceptor then said, Upamanyu, being restrained by me from the use of everything, is of course, and therefore doth not come home until it be late. Let us then go in search of him. And having said this, he went out with his disciples into the forest and began to shout, saying, Ho, Upamanyu, where art thou? And Upamanyu, hearing his preceptor's voice, answered in a loud tone, Here I am in the bottom of a well. And his preceptor asked him how he happened to be there, right? He's not feeling bad. He's not going, wow, this guy didn't feed me, I ate these leaves, I went blind, I fell in a well. No, you know, it's just, it's life, right? And his preceptor asked him how he happened to be there. And Upamanyu replied, Having eaten of the tree leaves of the arka plant, I became blind, and so I have fallen into this well. And his preceptor thereupon told him, Glorify the twin Ashwinis, the joint physicians of the gods, and they will restore thee thy sight. And Upamanyu, thus directed by his preceptor, began to glorify the twin Ashwinis in the following words of the Rig Veda. Ye have existed before the creation, ye firstborn beings. Ye are displayed in this wondrous universe of five elements. I desire to obtain you by the help of the knowledge derived from hearing and of meditation, for ye are infinite. Ye are the course itself of nature and intelligent soul that pervades the course. Now, in here we see is that you can understand from this two things. As the Vaishnavas, we understand how much is the Lord's potency in all the different demigods, right? It means it's not their own potency, it's God's potency, so his manifestation. At the same time, as we understand how the general person who's not well educated would get bewildered and think that these persons function separately, because it'll sound almost as if they're independent, you know, lords. Does that make sense? Ye are birds of beauteous feathers perched on the body that is like to a tree, right? Because they're health, right? So others would take it that they're super soul, right? That's health. Ye are without the three common attributes of every soul, right, meaning that making mistakes. Ye are incomparable, ye though your spirit in every created thing pervade the universe. Because the Ashwinis, we know, is their potency comes from Dhanvantari, who is Vishnu. Right? So that ability, he is there in the heart, he does all these things, he maintains the body, he is the life heirs, he is the balance of everything. Does that make sense? Ye are golden eagles, ye are the essence in which all things disappear. Right? Right, means you are the essence, means health is good, you maintain. Health is not good, you disappear. Right? Ye are free from error and know no deterioration. You are of beauteous beaks that would not unjustly strike, and are victorious in every encounter. Right, means you would not chastise if it wasn't worthy. Ye certainly prevail over time. Having created the sun, ye weave the wondrous cloth of the year by means of the white thread of the day and the black thread of the night. And with the cloth so woven, ye have established two courses of action, appertaining respectively to the devas and to the pitris. The bird of life seized by time, which represents the strength of the infinite soul, ye set free for delivering her unto great happiness. They that are in deep ignorance, as long as they are under delusions of their senses, supports you, and are independent of the attributes of matter, to be gifted with form. 360 cows, represented by 360 days, produce one calf between them, which is the year. That calf is the creator and destroyer of all. Seekers of truth follow different routes, draw the milk of true knowledge with its help. Ye Ashwinis, ye are the creators of that calf. The year is but a nave of a wheel to which is attached 720 spokes, representing as many days and nights. The circumference of this wheel, represented by 12 months, is without end. Right? It means in the wheel of time you have 12 months, you have day and night. This wheel is full of delusions and knows no deterioration. It affects all creatures, whether to this or of the other worlds. Ye Ashwinis, this wheel of time is set in motion by you. Okay, let's take. Then he mentions, ye Ashwinis, grant me my sight to protect my life. The twin Ashwinis thus invoked appeared and said, we are satisfied. Here is a cake for thee. Take and eat it. And Upamanyu thus addressed, replied, your words, O Ashwinis, have never proven untrue. But without first offering this cake to my preceptor, I dare not take it. And the Ashwins thereupon told him, formerly thy preceptor had invoked us. We thereupon gave him a cake like this, and he took it without offering it to his master. Do thou do that which thy preceptor did. Thus addressed, Upamanyu again said to them, O Ashwinis, I crave your pardon. Without offering it to my preceptor, I dare not apply this cake. The Ashwinis then said, O, we are pleased with this devotion of thine to thy preceptor. Thy master's teeth are of black iron. Thine shall be of gold. Thou shalt be restored to sight and shall have good fortune. Right? Thus spoken to by the Ashwinis, he recovered his sight. It means without even eating the cake. Right? In other words, yeah, we see he passed the test. And having gone to his preceptor's present, he saluted him and told him all. And his preceptor was well pleased with him and said unto him, thou shalt obtain prosperity even as the Ashwinis have said. All the Vedas shall shine in thee, and all the Dharma Shastras. And this was the trial of Upamanyu. In other words, this was his test, right? Instead of sitting down for an exam in English, right? This was the test, right? Does that make sense? Like that. So the main point is this: it's not what the preceptor is doing; it's what is the instruction, right? That's the most important. So the Vani is more important than Vapu, right? Because his position is different. He's not a Brahmachari. Right? In so many ways, his position is different. Or the situation of his training as a Brahmachari may have been different. Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's amazing how the universe is working for giving instruction. The Guru wants to give an instruction and the universe is helping to make all these things, make the point. Paramatma is working through.
Yeah. Because the whole thing is that the same instruction that's what is trying to be given in the universe. That's what Krishna is trying to give to the living entity. And so there are so many methods through which you can get it. So you can get it through either directly hearing and that, then that's best. If not, then you'll hear, you'll go out and you'll see like that. You'll hear from others, you know, otherwise by your own experience. So one quarter of your knowledge you get from the teacher. One quarter by contemplation. One quarter by hearing from others, and one quarter by experience, like that. So that's the process. So in all places, then what you didn't learn in one place, you'll learn in the next one. If you didn't learn as a Brahmachari, the same thing. You didn't learn to be humble. You have to be humble as a Grihastha, or you didn't learn to have a good service attitude. As a grihastha, you have to have one. You know, or you didn't learn respect. You have to be respectful as a grihastha. Right? So all these things that if you didn't learn in the one station, if you already knew them, it would make the next one go easier, but if not, the next one will teach it to you. And then if it didn't work there, then you'll learn as a vanaprastha. Right? If not, then as a sannyasi. If you don't learn it there, then hari ball. Come back again as the Brahmachari, you know, when you could have just gone back to Godhead.
This shows that it's a conscious being really teaching. It's Krishna in the world.
Yeah.
As well as he's the Adi Guru.
Yeah.
But you mentioned that one fourth part will be learned by experience.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also said that people who are not so intelligent, they learn by experience.
Mm-hmm. Means how you say? Okay, doubt is it said one quarter is by experiencing yourself, and then the doubt is that the third class intelligence is only learned through experience. So then, Here it's that you're performing an act. The one is, without experience, you can't learn. And the other is, you're already learning by hearing and seeing. But when you perform an activity, you're also learning. You know what I'm saying? Because when you do an activity, there will be an experience, right? There's a result. So you'll learn from that. But it's not that that's the only way you learned. Does that make sense?
Yes. In the material world, everybody goes first through the experience.
Generally, that's why it's third class intelligence. But one can learn by hearing.
And then, like you were saying, the brahmachari who has not learned in the vikastra state, then he comes back again, and maybe then he just does it by hearing.
Yeah, like that. No, it's said that, that if someone is learning very well now, means he's already done these lower levels of learning previously. So like, let's say someone's a very good brahmachari, means he's already done all this before. It means it's been done. It's not that it wasn't done, but he's done it before. So someone else is doing it now. He's done it before. But you have to learn like that. So that's the method. And then Veda, the other disciple, this is the third disciple, of Ayodhadomya was called. His preceptor once addressed him, saying, "Veda, my child, tarry some time in my house and serve thy preceptor. It shall be to thy profit." Right? You'll get benefit by staying extra time and not graduating. And Veda, having signified his assent, tarried long in the family of his preceptor, mindful of serving him. Like an ox under the burdens of his master, he bore heat and cold, hunger and thirst, at all times without a murmur. And it was not long before his preceptor was satisfied. So without a murmur, it means it's just, he does it this way. It means it gets hot, it gets cold, he can't do anything about it. Why complain? Right? And it was not long before, yeah, that's one thing, but then that's one on that neutral point. Then on the positive is that it's for someone else's benefit, so therefore you don't mind the difficulty, right? Does that make sense? If you're doing something for someone you like, you don't mind if there's a trouble, right? So then here it would come because of his wanting to please the spiritual master, so therefore he didn't mind. And it was not long before his preceptor was satisfied. And as a consequence of that satisfaction, Veda obtained good fortune and universal knowledge. And this was the trial of Veda. And Veda, having received permission from his preceptor and leaving the latter's residence after the completion of his studies, entered the domestic mode of life. And while living in his own house, he got three disciples. Right? So now he did Ayodhadomya and he had three disciples, right? Now the last of them, now we're going to he's discussing that. He had three disciples now, right? As a grihastha, then he ran his school. Right? After the completion of his studies, right? That's the idea, is that because in grihastha life you can continue studying what you already know, but it's really hard to start up new things like that. So if you really want to go in depth, it's all done before one goes into grihastha life. Does that make sense? Because now it is, you have the whole day to study and you don't get something studied, right? Because so many things to distract, you know, like that. You're tired or it's time to play or, you know, something, right? So now if you have a family and you have duties in that family, then where is that extra time going to come from? Right? You don't have time to study. You have time to take care of your duties. Does that make sense? So your study time is less. You don't have the whole day. Does that make sense? Yes.
As you were saying, contemplation is another quarter. So study is not just the book, what you were saying. Study is just to be there.
Yeah. It means you have to, it means you've heard the knowledge, then you have to contemplate it and practice it. Then it actually gets somewhere. Because otherwise, without contemplation, you don't actually learn. It means by contemplation, then you'll understand it. And then by practicing it, then contemplating that which is practiced, then you get realization. Right? So this could also be the difference. The person who learns by the hearing, right, and the contemplation, then when they contemplate the activity, You know, I mean, in other words, the experience, they get realization. While the other person only gets knowledge through experience. Does that make sense? So there's a difference. Okay?
Yeah. Another thing is, Brahmachari, he studies the Veda, mm-hmm. and then he memorizes the whole thing. And when he becomes Grihastha, then he performs Griha Sutras, but that's what also studied before. And he basically puts everything into activity and action. Mm-hmm.
Practice.
He practices it. And then after when he becomes Vanaprastha, then he studies Aranyaprastha, where he understands why to do all those things, what are the main principles behind it, and why everything functions. Purpose. And when he becomes Sannyasi, then he renounces everything and understands what is the higher purpose, how to go back to Gathar. Maybe, let's say.
Right. So in other words, everything that you're going to use in life, you're learning as a brahmachari. Because everything is based on the subtle. So it's not, so to become expert in something, it's not actually, means one is the practice of it. The art takes practice. But actually being good in something actually is the mentality. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Okay, let us say you can't control your senses, and whatever plan you make, you can't do it. What you want, you have to have, and you make a plan, but then something else comes up, you become bewildered or disturbed, and so you may take a different plan. Okay? Okay. You start a business, right? And money comes back from the business, right? You had 100 rupees, you invested it, you sold it, and by selling, you made 200 rupees. Now you take that 200 rupees and you spend it. Right? Can you be called a businessman? No, because now where's your next investment? At least 100 rupees should go back. But if you're smart, you put more and make bigger. Why have 100? You could have two. You could take 20 and invest 180. Right? But if you're not sense controlled, that won't work. Right? If you make a plan how you're going to do the business and it's all worked out and it's very intelligent and then last minute due to some emotion or that you change it, are you necessarily going to get a good result? No. So can you be called a good businessman? No. You don't respect authority. And in the business world you have to work with businessmen and political people and other people who have influence in society. And if you disrespect them, is your business going to flourish? No. Okay. Now, in the Gurukul, you don't like to wash the pots, you don't like to clean the floor, you don't like to clean your clothes. The only fun thing to do is to eat and to play and to gossip. Right? So now it comes time to work. You have to take your money, you have to go buy goods, you have to bring those goods, you have to set up the shop, you have to sell those things, but you don't like to work. Are you going to be a good businessman? No. So now all those things are what you have to learn as a brahmachari. Right? To be a good brahmachari. So that means to be, now would the same apply if you didn't follow those as a kshatriya? Would it also, you'd run a good country if, you know, all the money you got in taxes you just spent, you know, having parties, or you couldn't control your senses in that way, or you didn't like to work, you didn't like to go out. Okay, some people are attacking your kingdom, but it's too much trouble, I'd rather just party. Right? I mean, there were kings who did that, right? It was called Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette. They did lose their heads. Like that, they were not popular kings, right? It happens, but so it won't work there. Now a Brahmin, he doesn't do his puja, doesn't study, doesn't read his, do his classes. Will it work? No. An artist, he doesn't practice his music or things like. Will it work? No. So that means if you're not a good brahmachari, you can't be a good grihastha. You wouldn't be able to be a good Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, right? If you're not a good brahmachari, you couldn't be a good vanaprastha sannyasi either. So if you're not a good brahmachari, you're not good at, you're a wastrel. You're a useless guy.
Asara.
Huh?
Asara.
Yeah, asara. Useless. Not good for anything. So that's why in the Vedic thing, it just takes these few things. Learn those nice, just these few things. And you'll be successful at anything you want to do. Other things, the technique is just practice. But even your practice at it, if you don't have the right attitude, you won't be able to use it. Right? Isn't it? Let's say you have somebody who has a really good voice, he's clever, he can sing really nice things, but he's very proud. So when he leads his kirtan and that, it's technically very nice, but is it satisfying? And you have another devotee, very sincere, leads the kirtan, but not necessarily an expert singer that he can sing all the complicated tunes and do this and that. But is it inspiring? Right. So that's the point, is the technique is secondary to the attitude. Technique is, of course, important. If you have the attitude and good technique, then even better. But even if you don't have so much technique, if you have the attitude, you will be successful. Right? The whole world is looking for such people. Everybody wants such people. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what's important, yes. Yeah. And that's the nice one. That's the one that they relate to the father. The one they relate to the mother, which will come up in here, is a little bit worse. Like that. They say stool. Like that. So that's why the Shastra generally sticks to the explaining it in relation to the father.
How this will apply with daughters?
Daughters, it's the same thing. It's the same qualities. The living entity needs these qualities. The humility, the tolerance, respect, not looking for respect back. You have that. No matter what you want to do, you'll be successful. If you look, any of these modern self-help things, all they're trying to do is teach you this, though they sometimes don't know it. They'll have other terms and other approaches. This is actually what they're trying to teach you. Like that. And I think it was one of the big books. There was something about the four, things of, management or something. It was a pop big book, I think, in the 80s or 90s. And then later on, another one came out, was the fifth principle. And that was sense control. That was all. That was big business. You can't control your senses. Even if you have these other four, you're not going to make it. Right? And another one was what they didn't teach you at the Harvard School of Business Management. Right? And that was on proper behavior. Just having that service attitude, respectful, having a good attitude. So that they don't teach you. They teach you all the techniques and how the market works and all the numbers and all different strategies, but they don't teach you just to be a nice person. Like that, so. Okay, now we're going to get into a whole another section with this Veda. Okay, and he never told him, and while living in his own house, he got three pupils, and he never told them to perform any work or to obey implicitly his own behests. For having himself experienced much woe while abiding in the family of a preceptor, he liked not to treat them with severity. Right, so his teacher used severity to teach, and it worked good. He produced very good students, yes.
What does severity mean?
Severity means very strong, very, sharp or cutting or extreme or like that. But we see is that what he produced, you'll hear of Udalaka again, right? But same in Veda, you'll hear of his disciples also like that. So then, but it doesn't mean that he was liberal and lax, means he would find another way to get the point across. You know what I'm saying? So some method has to be there that all these four methods or all these different aspects are learned. Right? It means the sense control, that humility, simplicity, respect, service attitude, knowledge. He'll find how to make that work. So his teacher did it in that way, which is proper. He gets the result worked. You may, he uses being very gentle. That also works. But the point is one must respond, right? The teacher deals gently. It means we see before, the teacher, it would have been one day. He sent him out with the cows. He would have come back hungry in the night. He would have asked him what is there, because all he wanted to see is that he's dependent upon the spiritual master. He wouldn't have gone through so much. But because he didn't, so therefore it took so long and became so extreme. So that's the thing. If one learns when it is very gentle, then it will remain gentle. And if not, then it will turn to more and more severe. Does that make sense? And when it becomes more severe, then if one says, oh, so strong, why can't he be nice? Then you have to check back, well, was he nice and I didn't listen? Right? Was he nice and I didn't listen? Right? Then we'll see, oh, well, maybe that's why it's more strong. Does that make sense? That's not make sense. Okay, so end here. Continue tomorrow with Veda and his three disciples. I mean, comes up the story of Utanka, right? The one with the earrings.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.